Good evening. Is it on properly? Yes, it is. My name is Joel Williams, and I am from South Africa. Although, if you hear my accent, you wouldn't know it, would you? I was born there, but I grew up around Birmingham. So, I've been back in South Africa about 12 years, and my wife, Brittany, we've been married for a little over 2 years, so she's been over there for that long. It's really an honor to be asked to speak for you tonight, and I was asked to talk a bit about the work in South Africa, and I'll try to give a bit of an overview. I'll focus more on the work that I'm directly involved in, but I hope you'll get an idea of what South Africa is like as far as the work of the Lord there. And then we'll also have a bit of a lesson after that. So we're talking about God's work in South Africa. As Paul, when he came back from his preaching trips, he gave a report about the work God had done among the Gentiles. And that's what we're talking about, the work that God is doing in South Africa, although he does it through his church, through his people, through preachers of the gospel and other Christians doing their part, it is God's work, and it's a wonderful thing that we see everywhere in the world where people listen to God and the changes that happen in their lives. It doesn't change the politics of the country. It doesn't change most of society, but it changes individuals, and that's the most important thing. And it's a wonderful thing to be involved in. South Africa is a country. Some people get confused and just think we're talking about Southern Africa. I've never been to Zimbabwe, although that is in Southern Africa. It's just north of South Africa. So South Africa is the country at the bottom of the continent of Africa. And it's the country of South Africa is about close to twice the size of Texas, which, if you don't know, that's fairly large. And there are 11 official languages in South Africa because there's a number of tribes there, and each has their own language. Some of the languages are very similar to each other. So isiZulu is very similar to isiXhosa and also to a couple of other languages. When you go to Zimbabwe, there's a language there, Ndebele, which is also very similar to Zulu. And they all come from a similar background. But when Shaka Zulu was forming the Zulu nation, he chased people all over. And so people who spoke the same language overall, over time, they've separated into a little bit different languages. But we do work through interpreters a lot. I'm in an area that is mostly Zulu. Before I forget, I should say Sanibonani Bazalwane. The church in Ashawi sends its greetings. They asked me to greet the churches where I spoke, and I've been forgetting a lot of the time, unfortunately, but You got the greeting from them. So in South Africa, we're in Ashawi, as Brother Klein mentioned, which is on the East Coast. It's a small town, but we have two fairly large cities on either side of us. One's about an hour, one's about an hour and a half drive. So Richards Bay, and there's another fairly sizable town right next to Richards Bay, which is called Impingani. And there's a church in both of those cities, although the church in Impingani is rather small, and they've lost a couple of their men due to murders over the past couple of years. That's not normal, but Impingani has had some bad things happening to them, but Anyway, that's a small congregation. Richards Bay is a bit bigger. But we work with some other congregations around. So these are some that I work with, Nongoma and Flagstaff. And now we're moving to Bizana, which is nearby. So these don't look so far apart on the map. But remember, this is a big country. And so we do have to do quite a bit of traveling. But when we talk about the churches in South Africa, big cities, most of them, the ones that I list here, all have churches anyway. So Johannesburg has a number of churches. And Cape Town, even though it's also a very large city, I think it has several churches, but most of them are institutional. There's only one conservative church I know of. Well, take that back. There's two that I know of, and there may be more than that. But I don't get over on that side of the country very much. Port Elizabeth is a big city, but they have a small congregation there. King Williamstown isn't as big, but they have a little bit of a larger congregation. And the church in Polokwane, way up there at the northern part, that one is fairly new. It's a big city, but there hasn't been a church there for quite a while. But some Christians moved there, and there's a college there. And so they've established a church there with the Christians who've moved there and the Christians who are students at the college. And so that one is fairly new. There are some areas, especially in Venda, the area of Venda, where there's a lot of churches scattered around. I wouldn't be able to tell you how many there are in Venda. It's called Venda because that's the tribal area of the Venda people, and they speak the Venda language. This is the area where David and Joanne Beckley work, and Louis Trickart. So there's actually not a church anymore, I believe, in Louis Trickart, but that's where they live, and close by there are quite a lot of churches in the villages around Venda. And then there are some other smaller towns all over where there are churches as well, and these are not all of them, but this gives you a bit of an idea of where the churches are concentrated. And you see there's a large part of the country that I don't have any stars on there. But you'll also notice that where they are is where it's greener, which is where the population is much denser as well. And so it fits the population density of the country where these churches are. In the western side, northwestern side, that's the northern province, there's very little there. It's a dry area, mostly. I guess there are farmers there, but there's very little out there. There's not many people. There is one man from that area who was converted a few months ago, but he was in Gauteng and doing some work. That's around Johannesburg, sorry. And he was converted through the correspondence course. But I haven't heard recently if he's still faithful. He was planning to go back home to the Northern Cape. So if he does that, he'd be the only Christian in that province, as far as I know. Of course, there may be other faithful churches in the country that I just don't know about. But these are the ones that I'm aware of. When you talk about the country of South Africa, there's a wide variety of landscapes and cities and living conditions. We live in a Ashawi, and this is a bit of an old picture of a Ashawi, but it doesn't look much different today. This gives you an idea of the small town. It's about 15,000 in population, which is about the size of Hartsel. And then you've got the big cities like Johannesburg, 4.4 million in population. And it's a big city. Durban is it's about 500,000. So that's still larger than Huntsville, at least the numbers I was looking at. Johannesburg's about 4.4 million. Cape Town has about 3.78 million. And both of those then are larger than Dallas, Houston, Philadelphia, Chicago, or Los Angeles as far as population goes. So there's big cities. And there's work being done there, but not as much as you would think for that those population sizes. Cape Town has very few men who are dedicated to preaching the gospel there. Robin Bauer and a friend of mine, Richard Harding, moved down there. He's not a full-time preacher. He owns his own business, but he moved down there to help with the work. And there's some other men there, but not many. Very few for such a large area. In Johannesburg, there's a few more. But still, for such a large place, you would think there would be more people working. But there's malls. You know, people wonder, is everything in Africa just, you know, grass huts and all of that? No, there's shopping malls just as nice as any of the malls over here. There's these big cities, port cities like Port Elizabeth. They're beautiful. There's the beaches, the rocks and the sandy beaches, and there's the open plains, there's the rolling mountains, this is behind my grandfather's house, the cane fields. So it's a lot of different places there. Not everything looks the same all over the country, just like in America. As far as living conditions, my grandfather has a pretty nice house. This is his home in Ashawi, and he's had it for 34 years or something like that since he moved there. And it's a fairly nice house. Here's another house, not too far away. This, we stayed there for a tent meeting. So this is not quite as nice of a house. This is a poorer area in a village. So for the area, this is normal. Here's an extension to their kitchen. They have the fire outside, boil the water for bathing or for cooking or whatever. So that's very normal for the villages. As far as church buildings go, this is the church building in Ashawi. You'll notice that I don't know if you can read it very well, but on the sign it says Ibantalika Christu / Church of Christ. We've got it in Zulu and in English because it's not a name, not a denominational title. It's to let everybody know what this is. And we have people worshiping there who speak English and people who speak Zulu. So this is to let everybody know this is a church that belongs to Christ. So that's a pretty nice building. My grandfather owns it. He's been trying to transfer it to the church for 15 years. but legal things keep holding it up. We're still trying to get that done. So he rents it out to the church for now. This is just the inside. And you'll notice I'm using an interpreter here, Brother Sipo Masuku. He's a high school principal. And he's one of our better interpreters. In Nongoma, another church I work with, we meet in a creche. That's a preschool. And so it's just a small building, but it's plenty big enough for the church that meets there. There's only about 15 members, I guess, of the church there in Nongoma. But men from Ashawi take turns going out there to preach every Sunday. There's four of us who rotate, and we have to go or they can't really meet because we have to pick them up in a pickup truck on the way. And they're very scattered, and so it's a three-hour drive to get there, and we pick up people along the way as we go, and then they're able to meet together. far as baptizing people goes, well, my grandfather has a baptistry in his backyard, as every preacher should, right? We have a portable baptistry that Les Maydell designed and built for us. We haven't used it much, but in one tent meeting we used it quite a bit. We had a number baptized in that tent meeting. And then sometimes we just find a body of water wherever. This one was under an overpass, and so it's enough water to baptize somebody in. This particular man who's being baptized here is Brother Mshlongo, and he had us come out to preach a tent meeting in his area, even though he wasn't a Christian yet. But he already knew what he needed to do. But it was tough because he had two wives, and polygamy is part of a problem in South Africa. And he knew he had to put away his second wife, who was the one who was nicer to him. But he did, and he repented, and he was baptized, and he's still faithful today, I'm happy to say. And his sister has since obeyed the gospel as well. There's other preachers in Ishawi. I'm not the only one there. There's actually three full-time preachers in that fairly small congregation. We've got about 60 to 70 members, something like that. Mzwandile Gazu, who's the man in front talking on the radio there, he's been preaching for, I think, about 17 years, something like that. And he's very good. He learned English after he got out of high school, pretty much. He had studied English in high school, but you know how it is when you study Spanish in high school, right? He didn't have anybody to really talk to, but he wanted to talk to my grandfather without an interpreter, so he learned English. And he's one of the really good preachers that we have. He's very good at finding biblical references quickly, remembering where they are, a lot better than I am. And he's good at answering Bible questions. So he does that a lot in tent meetings and on the radio. So the church in Ishawi pays for a radio program that he preaches on every Sunday night. The other man with him there in that photo is Kanile Majola. And he's newer to Ishawi. He's not a full-time preacher. He's a nurse. But he was part of a denomination called the Church of Christ. And they taught the true gospel, but they were off on a lot of other things, like the organization of the church, the Holy Spirit, and some other things. And so when he came to Ishawi, through the radio program, he got in touch with Mzwandile and learned the truth more accurately. And he's been doing a lot of good work since then as well. And then my grandfather, Paul Williams, he's 87 years old now, and he's still preaching very much, traveling around quite a lot. He makes the three-hour drives on Sunday mornings, too. He doesn't drive, but Zippo, who's there in the picture with him, drives him. He's his foster son, Zippo Shobedi, and he helps him in everything. He's a huge help. But he's been there for 50 years now in South Africa. Not in Ishawi, but in South Africa for 50 years. So he's still going strong. But we have three preachers, but we're hardly ever have two of us there in Ishawi on a Sunday morning because we go out to preach. We work with about seven different congregations among the three of us. And so some of those overlap a little bit, but we do work with other churches. One of the things that we have traditionally done a lot of is tent meetings. where we put up a tent somewhere where somebody's invited us. We've gotten permission from the chief and from the headman. And so we set up the tent for about 2 weeks. It's 12 days, Monday through the Friday of the next week. And we go through the Jewel Miller film strips. Mzwandile does all of that in Zulu. And then we have preaching, and we have questions afterwards people can ask, and he'll answer those. And just like in America, with the tent meetings that used to be here, it's starting to die out a little bit there because of electricity coming in, people having access to television. They're not as fond of coming out to the tent meetings, especially if you don't have entertainment. The denominations still have tent meetings there, but they have their big bands, and it's just a fun time for people who go. We don't provide that, and so sometimes people don't want to come. But we do still have people coming. They're still effective in reaching people, but we're not having as many of them anymore. I don't know of any other gospel preachers in South Africa who do tent meetings besides us in Ashawi. There may be others who do it, but in the cities especially, you can't really do it. You pretty much have to go to the rural areas, to the villages, to do the tent meetings. So just to give you a little bit of an idea of the size of the country and the distances, from Ashawi to Flagstaff, where Brittany and I go every other week, it's about 260 miles. So that's about the trip from Huntsville to Louisville, Kentucky. So imagine driving to Louisville and back every other Sunday. Driving there, preaching, driving back. That's what we do. I'm used to it. I've been doing it for 10 years or more. But for other people who are not used to it, it's really a long trip. But you get used to it, and it's not bad. We have a little bit of a shorter trip now because we're moving to a place a little bit closer in Bizana. The brethren who were in Flagstaff are going out to worship at the new, well, it's not a new congregation, but it's a new work that we're involved in, and I'll talk about that here. So, the headquarters of the Church of Christ in South Africa is in Benoni. And if that sounds wrong to anybody, of course it is wrong. But that's where the Southern Africa Bible College is. And they are the ones who basically oversee the institutional churches all over the country. They're the ones who send out the preachers, tell them where to go and when to leave, and all of those things. As well as, you know, being a church-supported college. So institutional churches are all over the country. The ones that I've pointed out are conservative congregations, ones that are not involved in institutionalism. But there are a lot of institutional churches all over the country. But the Southern African Bible School, originally called that, now college, it was founded in 1966. So it's been there for 52 years now, 2 years before my grandfather moved there. And when they founded it, it really caused a problem, just like happened in America in the 50s and 60s. It divided churches. The men who started it wrote letters telling all the churches to withdraw from Gene Tope and Ray Votaw because they would not support, they opposed churches supporting colleges. They said it's not scriptural, and so they said withdraw from them. And most of the white congregations, the majority white congregations, I think, followed along with that. As I think happened over here, it's usually the wealthier groups that are attracted more to institutionalism. But the black brethren, especially in Venda, it seems, they said, no, We want you all to come and have a debate. We want to hear what the scriptures say. We're not just going to listen when you say withdraw from these men. They've been teaching us the gospel for years, and so they did not follow along with that, most of them. But this church in Bizana that I talked about, now I said Bizana, it's really in Lucullo, but that's a small area near the town of Bizana. So you can see on their sign, they say World Bible School. And that is an institutional organization that's supported by churches. Churches send money to them, and they send money to preachers, and also they help churches with their correspondence courses and things like that. From everything I've heard, their material is good. I haven't really looked at it myself much, but the organization is wrong. It's not scriptural. And this church was attached to them and to other institutional ideas and other liberal ideas, if we can use that term. They had women leading singing in the church. But it wasn't because they were rebellious, I don't believe. It was because they simply had never studied it. They didn't know. They hadn't thought, I think, to look at what the scriptures say about those things. And so Kanyile Majola, who I mentioned, is the nurse in Ishawi who does quite a bit of preaching. He is from that area, and so he spoke to these brethren, and they've been coming out of institutionalism. They've been starting to get the men to lead singing, even though the men are not good song leaders and are very unsure of themselves, but they're starting to do it because they know that's their responsibility. And so this is the congregation that the ones in Flagstaff are going to, and we're going to be working with them more when we get back to South Africa. They've welcomed us to come and help them out. So I'm looking forward to that opportunity. Part of the work of pretty much all the gospel preachers, probably everywhere in the world, but certainly in South Africa, are classes that we have with individuals and families during the week. And you'll see that there's a variety of skin colors here. In Ishawi, it's mostly Zulus, but we do have some coloreds. And some of you may have felt your skin crawl when I said that word, but that's not a racial slur in South Africa. A colored is a person of mixed race, and that's what they call themselves. That's what they want to be called, is coloreds. They are generally a separate group. They, in our area, they speak English primarily. In other areas, they mostly speak Afrikaans, which is what the white people in those areas speak. But there's also Indians that we work with. In the Durban area, there are a lot of Indians. They are, I think, a quarter of the population in Durban. And Brother Klein has met some of these particular people. He taught a class here. That's where I met him, at the this class in Tongaat. Sister Charmaine Naidu and her daughters and her brother-in-law and his son and his son's girlfriend all come to this class on Tuesday nights. And so we study a lot of things. Recently, we studied through the 17 time periods. Well, mostly the time periods of the Old Testament. But we've studied through a lot of things with them, and I think it's helped them to grow a lot. The girlfriend of Brother Rajan's son is a Hindu. And so it's interesting to me how she takes teaching about idolatry that's all through the Old Testament. But she learns very well. She's a good student. She doesn't seem to get upset about what we're studying. So I'm hoping that she will obey the gospel at some point. We'll see. His son is not a Christian yet. In fact, he wouldn't even go to church with his father until his mother recently passed away. She was a Christian, but she had a lot of health problems and used that, I think, as an excuse not to go to church. And So he said, well, if mom doesn't go, why should I? But now that she's passed away, he's going with his father, and he's coming to the classes as well. There are also white people in South Africa. These are Christians in Uitenhage, which is just around Port Elizabeth. So I went and I've preached several meetings for them there. They speak Afrikaans, although they worship in English there. But I don't speak any Afrikaans, so I'm glad that they understand English. Otherwise, I'd be working through an interpreter there as well. Where we are, it's mostly an English area, so I haven't had any real motivation to learn Afrikaans. But I also haven't gotten any studies with white people in our area. I don't know how to meet white people. They're around. We have a neighbor who's white. We've tried to talk to her, but so far we haven't had any success with her. White people are a fairly decent size of the population. In some areas, 15% of the population. But it's hard to reach them with the gospel. It's hard to get to know them. They're not as open as the blacks or the coloreds or the Indians. Another important work that we are involved in there is preacher training. And the white man towards the front there, who's not me, is James Buchanan. And he was in Columbia, Tennessee for a number of years before he moved to South Africa. And he moved there with four children and his wife. And he was there for about 4 years, did a great job. And they just had trouble with visas and everything for their kids going to school and all of that, and decided it wasn't worth it anymore, and moved to Ireland. But while he was there, he did a lot of great work in Venda, and one of the things he organized was the preacher training, and I think that was very helpful. And I got to help out some with that. Other men also were involved in preacher training. Here you have Robin Bauer from Cape Town, and Brian Allen from Port Elizabeth, and sort of in the background, you can't see him very well, is Robert Buchanan from White River. And just as a side note, Brother Buchanan and Bob Buchanan, that you guys might know from Kentucky, and Robin Bauer have just been in Mozambique preaching there, and Rob Buchanan collapsed. He's got very low blood pressure, and so he's not in good condition right now. It was very hot there, and they didn't have good food or good water, so apparently that helped to contribute to his condition. So if you keep him in your prayers, that would be good. We have gotten some new co-workers. Of course, Brittany married me and became my co-worker. And Elijah's not much help yet. But maybe one day he'll figure out how to be helpful. But she does a lot of useful things just in helping me in general, as I think every preacher's wife does. But she also teaches ladies' classes, and she gets her parents to make visits so that they can teach classes. So that's pretty useful, too. This is Brittany's mother when she came over and taught some ladies' classes, where she didn't come for that purpose. But when you visit us, you have to work. That's the rule. But we are losing some workers, at least being located there. I'm sure they're going to still be involved in the work, but the Kindleballs and the Maydells are having to leave Durban and move to America. Sister Kindleball has cancer, and so she's having to get her treatment here in Decatur. They're staying in Decatur anyway. And the Maydells, Sister Maydell's mother in St. Louis, has dementia now, and they had to move over here to help take care of her. So that's a blow to the work, because they're some of the most capable workers that we have. Even though they're older preachers, older doesn't mean less capable in any sense, does it? They're very energetic, they're very hardworking, and of course very knowledgeable. And so we're going to miss them a lot in the work there, and they were good friends to have around too. But that's basically what I wanted to talk about with the work over there. But I want us to look for a moment at the command that Christ gave to his apostles in Matthew 28. I'm sure everybody here is familiar with this. But it says in Matthew 28, verse 16 through 20, "But the 11 disciples proceeded to Galilee, to the mountain which Jesus had designated. When they saw him, they worshipped him, but some were doubtful. And Jesus came up and spoke to them, saying, 'All authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. Go, therefore, and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I commanded you. And lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the age.'" And I want to focus on what I've highlighted there, his statement to go, therefore, and make disciples of all the nations. When we look at that, we're not talking about something that is only in other countries, are we? So when we say all the nations, that includes America, doesn't it? So it's when, if you don't go to Africa, you're not breaking God's command. We need people spreading the word in America, too. And that's important. Of course, that's something that sometimes comes up as an argument of why you shouldn't go to another country. Well, but don't we need preachers in America, too? Yes, we do. But we have so many people in America who are capable of preaching and teaching the gospel. This congregation, I bet, has, even if half of you are able to teach somebody the gospel, I bet that's not an overestimation. I bet that's an underestimation. That's a lot of people who are capable. In other countries, well, depending on the country, but in South Africa anyway, we do not have people who are capable in those numbers. And that's true of a lot of other nations. We need people who are capable to be doing the work. I'm not the greatest preacher. I'm sure you can tell that by listening to me talk. I'm not a great preacher, but the greatest preachers aren't over there. We have some good ones. But Where I go, I'm the preacher. I'm the one who's the most capable. Even though in this room, I'm certainly not the most capable. We need to make sure that we're not just thinking, well, you know, we can send people. That's a very good thing. And the church here has been very good about that. You support a lot of preachers, and that is a wonderful thing. That's great. But that's not going to fulfill the command, is it? Not in itself. We need to be looking around us. Look around Athens. Well, Athens is full of Christians, aren't they? It's also full of people who are not Christians. We need to be looking for opportunities to teach people around us. We need to be thinking not of, okay, we're sending people to other countries, but what can we do in this nation? Not on a political level, but on an individual level. And we're to go and make disciples. And that does not just apply to those who are supported as preachers. That applies to everybody. Everybody who's capable, anyway. I understand not every Christian is capable of sitting down with somebody and teaching them. But you can arrange classes with somebody, can't you? We need to be looking for these opportunities, not just thinking it's the preacher's responsibility. In Ashawi, a number of the newer Christians were not taught by the preacher going out and finding classes with somebody. They're somebody arranging a class with us, or teaching them themselves. They're co-workers. It's very important that we're looking for opportunities to make disciples of all the nations, including where we are. In Acts chapter 8, we see this put into action. When Saul was persecuting the church, leading that persecution, he was dragging men and women off into prison. And it says there at the end, therefore those who had been scattered went about preaching the word. Did they say, okay, I'm going to go over here to this place to preach to these people because I know they need the gospel? They had to run for their lives, and wherever they went, wherever they were, they looked for opportunities. And they found them, and they took them. They went everywhere preaching the word because they were scattered. And so it was good for the kingdom, even though it wasn't nice for those brethren. We need to look for the opportunities where we are. There's a song, Follow Me, that I like the words to this. This is one of the verses. It says, oh Jesus, if I die upon a foreign field someday, 'twould be no more than love demands, no less could I repay. No greater love hath mortal man than for a friend to die. These are the words he gently spoke to me. If just a cup of water I place within your hand, then just a cup of water is all that I demand. But if by death to living they can thy glory see, I'll take my cross and follow close to thee. The point of this is not everybody has to go to a foreign field, right? But whatever opportunity and ability Christ has given to us, we need to take that. And I'm afraid that there are brethren, especially in an area so populated by capable brethren, who are not using their abilities as much as they could. Even if you think about America, think about all the places in America where there's a huge shortage of preachers. Think about other countries, South America, Africa, lots of other places. I don't know much about Asia, but I'm sure there's a need there. Think about it. Would you be more useful in the kingdom if you went somewhere else? I'm not saying that you would, but it's something we need to think about. We need to go and make disciples, but we have to do it within our abilities, within what opportunities the Lord gives to us. But what about you? We're talking about going and spreading the gospel, and here's another instance where he says almost the same thing. But the question tonight is, have you obeyed this yourself? Are you even part of the kingdom? Are you saved? Are you in Christ? He says here, Jesus said to them, go into all the world and preach the gospel to all creation. He who has believed and has been baptized shall be saved, but he who has disbelieved shall be condemned. So what about you? Do you believe? Have you believed? Have you been baptized? Are you saved? If not, then everything else we've talked about doesn't make any difference. and really neither does anything else. Nothing makes any difference if you're not saved, if you're not in the kingdom of God. If tonight you want to put on Christ, you want to be part of that kingdom, you want to be saved, then the opportunity is there. And we won't probably have to take you to under an overpass to baptize you. But even if we did, it shouldn't matter, should it? Our faith is in Christ. It has to be there. He's the one that washes away our sins. Do you want that tonight? Or if you're a Christian who has not been living right and you need the prayers of the church, you need to confess something to the church, you need the help of the brethren in any way, you can receive that tonight if you'll come forward as we stand and sing.